Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Just 2 days till the opening of the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, and we still don't know if any Russian musicians will be in town for the Games. This despite now reaching the midpoint of our week-long series on Russian pop music, past and present. Just can't figure out what's happening 2 days into the future. Well, I can tell you that at least one musician, a pretty famous one, will be in Sochi for the Olympics. Here, listen. That's the classical crossover violinist Vanessa May. She's pretty, she's rich, she's sold over 10 million records, which helps explain the rich part, and she will definitely be in Sochi this coming week. But she won't be performing. Well, I mean, she won't be playing the violin. She will be performing, just in a different way. Vanessa May is representing Thailand in alpine skiing under her birth name of Vanessa Vanacorn. Look for her in the women's giant slalom. She'll also be easy to spot at the opening ceremonies because the Thai Olympic team consists of a single male skier and her. As for musicians who are performing, we've got the indie pop band Hospitality making a return visit to our Soundcheck studio in just a bit. But first...
From Russia with love, I fly to you.
All week here on Soundcheck in the lead-up to the Sochi Olympics, we're taking a look at the music of Russia in a series we're calling From Russia with Soundcheck. Remember, we're not in Russia. There we'd be warm and dry. No, we're still in New York, where the real winter weather is. And joining me on the line is Regina Spektor, the singer and songwriter who actually spent her early childhood in the former Soviet Union. Regina, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John.
Now, you left in 1989. You were already pretty deep into your musical studies by then, right?
Yeah. Well, I only studied classical music there, classical piano. But I really loved Russian music, and my parents always played a lot of bards in our house. So my musical taste was sort of just divided into three camps. It was classical music, then there was some sneaky Western stuff that my dad got, which was the Beatles and Queen and Moody Blues and stuff like that, that wasn't really, you know, Soviet approved.
Right.
And then there was all of the bards.
Now, when you say bards, those are like the guitar poets. Yeah,
they were singer-songwriters in the truest sense, and they really varied amongst, you know, in their styles from each other, but, you know, some were more lyrical and some were more kind of like political, you know, and they all would just, they were very self-sufficient. They weren't ever released as, you know, proper records, so most of the time it was things that were house concerts, gatherings, kind of sometimes student songwriter gatherings, and people would just bring their guitar and play their songs.
Now, but there was one artist in particular that I understand really meant something to you. Tell us about Vladimir Vysotsky.
Yeah, he's still to this day, I think, one of my greatest musical heroes, and I think he's just one of the most talented and brilliant artists of, you know, this century for sure. He's
actually the last century, right?
Yeah, of course, it was the last century. And it's interesting because even though he died in 1980 and I was born in 1980, I feel like I overlapped with him. Like my life overlapped because he was such a, he was such a part of my daily life in Russia. And when we immigrated, we couldn't bring a lot of things. We were very limited in our luggage. Everybody had like one outfit, but we had a ton of Vysotsky cassettes because, you know, everybody prioritizes what they need, and my parents really prioritized culture. So we had a lot of music and books with us.
He was known sometimes as the Bob Dylan of Russia. Was he writing protest songs?
Yeah, he was extremely subversive, and he had occupied a fascinating place in the culture because he wrote extremely just like anti-establishment songs, but they were so witty and so entertaining that I think that the establishment itself was just so entertained by him that he was in this uncomfortable position of basically he was also a pet, you know, like they just he was just too good to be eliminated and stifled. He wrote hundreds of songs during his life.
Well, tell me about the one which in English is called Things I Don't Like.
Yeah, Я не люблю. Basically, it's a list song, but he said that one of the themes that emerged was that people would want to know what he actually believed, you know. They want to know, but you, like, you yourself, what do you like? What are you against, you know? So he said that this song was born out of this desire of his listeners to know a little bit more about him.
Well, let's hear a little bit of this song called, in English, Things I Don't Like, a song by Vladimir Vysotsky.
Я не люблю фатального исхода от жизни, никогда не устаю. Я не люблю любое время года, когда веселых песен не пою. Я не люблю холодного цинизма, восторженность не верю. И еще, когда чужой мои читает письма, заглядывая мне через плечо. Я не люблю, когда наполовину или когда прервали разговор. Я не люблю, когда стреляют в спину. Я также против выстрелов в упор. Я ненавижу сплетни в виде версии, червей сомнения, почести и глупости.
That's a little bit of Vladimir Vysotsky, a Russian singer, songwriter, who was also a pretty famous actor in the Soviet Union. He died in 1980. Regina Spektor, the singer-songwriter who spent her early years in the former Soviet Union, is on the line with us on Soundcheck, remembering Vysotsky's music and his unique place in Soviet society back in the 60s and 70s. It's part of our series From Russia with Soundcheck in the lead-up to the Sochi Olympics. Listening to Vysotsky, the first thing that strikes me, not being able to understand the words, Regina, is that voice.
Yeah.
What an unusual voice that is, especially for a guy who was apparently quite a famous actor. Was his speaking voice as unusual as the singing voice?
His speaking voice is really low and gentle, and but when he would recite poetry or when he would sing, he had this sound that to me just sounds like a true translation of his soul, which is, I think, very rare in anyone, really.
So was he more famous in the Soviet Union as an actor? Because, as you said before, many people did not hear many of his songs. He didn't record that many officially.
Well, that's interesting. I know that he was known as an actor, especially because he was part of a very experimental, yet very respected theater group in Moscow called Taganka. My mom saw him perform Hamlet, and he was considered to be the actor that played the greatest Russian version of Hamlet that there was, just on the theater stage. But he also did some films, so he was known as a film actor, but I think because of how his music spread through just people passing it to each other, he probably was still much more known for his songs than for his acting.
Right.
And he died so young. He died at the age of 42. He had a very tragic, sort of burned up, you know, and he had, he's had so many struggles with addiction, alcoholism. So, and I'm sure that it didn't help that he felt completely caged and oppressed and not allowed to go into any kind of, sort of relegated into this world of amateur songwriter when he was such a genius.
We're speaking with Regina Spektor, the singer-songwriter, about one of her favorite singer-songwriters, Vladimir Vysotsky, who streaked across the stage and the illicit cassette tapes of many Soviets in the 60s and 70s. Was there a song, a particular song that that's a favorite of yours?
There's this one song that I grew up with that I don't know what it would be called in English, but it basically takes place in a mental institution. And it's all about all these different insane people in the mental institution talking about the Bermuda Triangle and the different things that happen in it and their suspicions. And it's I don't know, it's just one of the funniest things on the whole planet.
Про любимый лунный трактор, ведь нельзя же ход подряд, то тарелками пугают, дескать, подлые летают, то у вас собаки лают, то у вас руины говорят. Мы кое в чем поднаторели, мы тарелки бьем весь год, мы на них уже собаку съели, если повар нам не врет. А медикаментов груды, мы в окно, кто не дурак, вот это жизнь, и вдруг Бермуды, вот и раз, нельзя же так.
I also love. He has this one song that's called «Тот, кто раньше с нею был», which means, how do I translate that? It would be like «One who was with her before». It's all about this guy who falls in love with this woman at a party, but then gets a warning from the guy who was with her before, and he doesn't heed it. And then basically the guy who was with her before one night like meets him with like eight other guys, and then there's this whole amazing thing of like, I hit him first because that's what I had to do, and then he ends up in prison. And but there's like this refrain of like the one who was with her before, and you know, when you try to explain them, they dissipate in your hand like fog. You can't explain the tension and the beauty of form.
Why don't we let the music speak for itself? Russian speakers in the audience will get exactly what Regina Spektor's talking about. The rest of us just enjoy the voice and the music of Vladimir Vysotsky.
И тот, кто раньше с нею был, сказал мне, чтоб я уходил, сказал мне, чтоб я уходил, что мне не светит. И тот, кто раньше с нею был, он мне грубил, он мне грозил, а я все помню. Я был не пьяный, когда ж я уходить решил. Она сказала, не спеши, она сказала, не спеши, ведь слишком рано. Когда ж я уходить решил, она сказала, не спеши, она сказала, не спеши, ведь слишком рано. Но тот, кто раньше с нею был, меня, как видно, не забыл. И как-то в осень иду с дружком, гляжу, стоят. Они стояли молча в ряд, они стояли молча в ряд, их было восемь. Иду с дружком, гляжу, стоят, они стояли молча в ряд, они стояли молча в ряд, их было восемь. Со мной нож, решил я, что ж, меня так просто не возьмешь. Держитесь, гады, держитесь, гады, к чему за даром пропадать? Ударил первым я тогда.
That's music from Vladimir Vysotsky, a Soviet singer-songwriter, hugely popular in the underground cassette tape culture of the USSR in the 60s and 70s, also famous as an actor. And a hero of singer-songwriter Regina Spektor, who spent her early years in the former Soviet Union and who's with us on the line. The one who was with her before me would be the somewhat cumbersome English translation of that Russian title. So, Regina, you mentioned he was born in the late 30s. He was in his early 40s when he died in 1980. Interestingly, he died during the Olympics. So here is,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so here as we're gearing up for the Olympics in Sochi later this week, certainly is appropriate to look back at Vysotsky's music. Is he still a big deal in Russia today?
Oh, yes. I would say he's still, to this day, the most iconic hero of the, you know, of the Russian people. I don't think anyone has come since in, you know, in popular culture in any way. I mean, I think he's sort of up there with, you know, there's Pushkin and there's Tchaikovsky, you know, and there's Tolstoy and then there's Vysotsky.
Wow.
It's kind of...
That's pretty.
I think that's where he sits, and as far as Russian people, every single person you'll ever ask about him in Russia will know his name.
That's pretty heady company. Regina Spektor sharing her love of Vysotsky's music with us on Soundcheck today. Regina, so nice to talk to you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, John. I'm so glad you asked me to talk about Vysotsky. He's just, my heart is just full of love for him.
Сам король страдал желудком и астмой, только кашлем сильный страх наводил. А тем временем зверюга ужасный, коих ел, а коих в лес волочил. И король тотчас издал три декрета: зверь, надо говорить, одолеть наконец. Вот кто отчается на это, тот принцессу поведет под венец. А в отчаявшемся том государстве, как войдешь ты прямо наискосок, в бесшабашной желтоске и гусарстве, бывший лучший, но опальный стрелок. На полу лежали люди и шкуры, пели песни, пили меды, и тут протрубили во дворе трубадуры.
Vladimir Vysotsky and a song called The Tale of the Wild Boar. Coming up, our series From Russia with Soundcheck continues as we look at the underground networks that distributed literature and music around the former Soviet Union, including the music of Vysotsky. That's next on Soundcheck.
Я вам мозги не пудрю, уже не тот завод. В меня стрелял поутру из ружей целый взвод. За что мне эта злая, нелепая стезя? Не то чтобы не знаю, рассказывать нельзя, мой командир. Меня почти что спас.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So we just heard Regina Spektor talking about this singer and songwriter, Vladimir Vysotsky, and you heard her mention how his music spread through a kind of underground tape network rather than through big hits on the radio. Now, as our look at Russian pop music, past and present, continues this week, we really need to take a moment to talk about samizdat, the name given to this underground, DIY counterculture that was such a huge part of life in the old Soviet Union. There's an exhibit of artifacts of samizdat, pamphlets and books, and cheap cassettes and more at George Washington University's Gelman Library. That exhibit is curated by Mark Yaffe, who joins me now. Mark, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck.
My pleasure.
So, first of all, what does the word samizdat mean?
Samizdat culture consisted of many different trends. The most well-known is, of course, underground clandestine publications. Sam Sibya Izdat, that is self-publication. Books and magazines and journals and letters of protest that circulated among Soviet population.
I've seen the word recently, the word Magnitizdat.
Indeed, Magnitizdat refers to an audio part of Samizdat culture. Not only songs, but lectures and poetry recitals.
And was the interest in Russian and Soviet music, or was it in the spread of Western music as well?
Yes, Western rock production was very widely circulated on magnetic tape, first on reel-to-reel and then on cassette tape through the 60s, 70s and 80s. That was a huge, huge tradition.
And what kind of music were people trying to get into the country there?
Well, it pretty much depended on where you lived and on your personal tastes. Baltic countries, where I am from, Riga, Tallinn, Vilnius, you could pretty much obtain contemporary Western recordings about a week later after they would come out in the West. But in provinces and provincial Russian towns, of course, it was much harder to obtain fresh materials. But most people listened and looked looked for and could obtain what they liked. So if you liked Procol Harum or Pink Floyd, you could look for that on the black market and get it.
So when Pink Floyd issued The Wall in the UK and the US, how much later did the Samizdat or Magnitizdat underground get hold of it?
Probably next day.
Really? So it was like a little, well, a proto-internet.
Well, that was already 1980. I mean, the spread of this kind of information was almost immediate. Again, in central cities of Russia, in Leningrad and in Moscow and in Baltic republics,
right,
probably.
Right. So Samizdat publications could often get you in trouble. They were, as you say, by definition, protest-oriented, countercultural. Could the same thing happen if you were caught with these cassettes, with these underground songs?
Not so much. Of underground singer-songwriters such as Vladimir Vysotsky and others, there was only one that was considered to be a bona fide dissident singer-songwriter. That was Alexander Galich.
А девчонка сидела с Богом, к Богу фасом, а к прочим боком. Ей домой бы бежать к папане. Она щелкается шампанью, похлёвочки, мочалочки, сладко вина пьются в серебряной чарочке на золотом блюдце.
Александр Галич.
G-A-L-I-C-H.
His recordings of his songs could get you in somewhat of a trouble, but some Magnitizdat were so widespread, permeating the entire existence of Soviet Union, you pretty much had to arrest everybody. That was not doable.
We're speaking with Mark Yaffe. He is the curator of International Counterculture Archive and the Soviet Samizdat Archive at George Washington University. We're talking about Samizdat culture, this underground DIY counterculture that was such a big part of the Soviet Union. This band we're going to hear next, Mark, this is a band called Gражданская оборона, Civil Defense.
Yes.
The song's called Everything is Going According to Plan. I see that title and I think this has to be ironic, maybe even
Indeed. Sarcastic.
So is this, I mean, if you look under the surface, is this a political song?
Гражданская оборона was a very strongly political band, which always found itself on the wrong side of a barricade. During the Soviet regime, they were protesting the Soviets. After 91, they dedicated themselves to protesting new rich capitalist tendencies in Russian life. And when in 2007, Егор Летов, its frontman and poet laureate of Russian punk, died of a heart attack, the whole era of glorious Soviet / Russian counterculture came to an end.
When was that?
In 2007.
Well, let's hear him in action with the band Gражданская оборона, or Civil Defense, in a song called Everything is Going According to Plan.
Накормили толпу мировым кулаком, растоптали ей грудь, все народной свободой растерзали ей плоть. Так закопайте же ее во Христе, ведь все идет по плану. Все идет по плану.
Everything is going according to plan is the name of that song. Гражданская оборона, or Civil Defense would be the English translation of that Soviet rock band led by Igor Lietov. Mark, you referred to him as the poet laureate of Russian punk.
Yes.
We were talking before about Vladimir Vysotsky. Regina Spektor was telling us that he made relatively few official recordings, but hundreds of songs in this Samizdat culture, or Magnitizdat, the musical version. Is that how these bands would make their reputation?
Yes, yes, indeed. Pretty much no Russian rock band that had any self-respect ever recorded with government Melodia studio.
Right. Because they did Melodia, famous in classical music circles, not so much in the world of pop music here in the West.
Yes.
This list of Russian rock music that you've given us, and which listeners you can find on our website at soundcheck.org, that list includes bands like Zvuki Mu and Aukcion. I have records by these bands.
Neither Aukcion or Zvuki Mu ever made an official recording in Russia before 1991. The first 1989 recording of Zvuki Mu was done by Brian Eno.
Right. So you're saying that was done outside the country?
Outside of country, yes.
I see. So back
the
home.
Same with Aukcion.
Back home, they were still doing the cassettes, the network of underground cassettes.
Network of underground cassettes and network of underground concerts, yes.
Okay. This is a little bit from that band, Zvuki Mu, which, as Mark said, they did make a commercial recording with the English producer Brian Eno, but this is a song of theirs called Grey Dove.
Едут машины и давят меня. Земля и солнце. Я хлебные крошки ищу на земле. Ты пинаешь меня, но и тоскуешь по мне тоже. Грязен, я болен, моя шея тонка. Свернуть эту шею не дрогнет рука.
Grey Dove is the name of that music from the Russian band, or the Soviet band, I guess I should say, Zvuki Mu. Up until 1991, that's what they were. We're talking with Mark Yaffe about Samizdat and its musical subgenre, Magnitizdat. These were the kind of underground DIY countercultures in the old Soviet Union, the subject of an exhibit at George Washington University's Gelman Library, which Mark curated. And Mark, how extensive was the Samizdat network? You talked before about being in the big cities or in the provinces. You know, how much of the country, it's a huge country, how much of it was blanketed by this network?
It grew over the years. Russians play rock and roll music since 1959. I mean, the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than 50 years. But in the 80s, there was an explosion, absolute explosion of underground channels of distribution.
And who was listening? Was it a younger generation for the most part?
Younger generation for the most part, but as younger generation aged, it continued to listening.
So by the 80s, you had the people who were young in the 60s. And 70s still listening, and then you had a new generation coming in as well.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And how important would that be, this kind of access to countercultural books and pamphlets and songs and exposure to Western culture? How important would that be in the ultimate breakup of the Soviet Union?
Well, access to printed Samizdat was very, very limited. It was the most dangerous part of Samizdat culture. If you were caught with Solzhenitsyn's Samizdat distributed book, you were looking at a jail term. However, if you were caught with cassette recordings by bands like Zvuki Mu or Television, nothing would happen to you. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it distributed very widely through the country and became, by, let's say, 1987, a flagship of cultural resistance in the Soviet Union. I'm not exaggerating this. This is a very important fact. Until then, Russian literature was the cultural flagship with Solzhenitsyn and Boris Pasternak, but the torch of resistance was forwarded to younger people, mostly rock musicians, and they pretty much single-handedly liberated the Soviet Union of the yoke of horrible censorship that permeated cultural life in the country. country. And there is one specific individual, Mikhail Barzykin of Leningrad band Televizor, who in 1987-88 started to refuse submitting lyrics of his songs to censorship before the concerts. Therefore, he single-handedly abolished the whole grandiose institution of Soviet censorship.
Может, ему не знаком Шопенгауэр, но воля и власть — это все, что в нем есть. И я не пойду за ним, как вижу плоды могучих иллюзий. Мне нужен свой свет, мне нужен свой крест. Твой папа фашист.
Song's called Your Dad is a Fascist. Mikhail Borzykin's lyrics, he did not submit them for censorship in the Soviet Union in 1988-89. That's his band Televizor. Mark Yaffe just telling us about how this sort of marked a passing of the torch, the torch of resistance in the Soviet Union, going from the great Russian writers to the young rock singers and songwriters. Mark, it's so different now. Is there anything in Russia, in contemporary Russia, that's at all like this samizdat culture that we've been talking about?
It is a different country today due to the proliferation of World Wide Web. Absolutely not comparable to what it was before 1991. Sharing of music is easy. You pretty much can exist as a DIY band. You don't have to be working with any kind of commercial outfit. It is a giant liberating force. However, I have to say that the first 14 years of this century were years of stagnation for what used to be glorious Russian rock and roll culture. Mm. And almost nothing of importance and interest except for St. Petersburg band Leningrad and a couple of others.
We actually, Mark, heard about that band Leningrad earlier this week. So why don't we wrap up with a little bit of their music. This is post-Samizdat, of course. This is much more recent. But we've been talking with Mark Yaffe, who curated the current Samizdat exhibit at George Washington University's Gelman Library. Again, Samizdat, the name given to this underground DIY counterculture that was so important in the old Soviet Union. Mark, it is fascinating stuff. Thanks for sharing it with us on the program today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And don't forget to check our website for Mark Yaffe's complete list of some of the songs and videos from the leading Russian and Soviet musicians we've been talking about and many others. That's at soundcheck.org. If you're a fan of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, you'll know Benmont Tench is that group's pianist. He's also played with Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, and the Rolling Stones. Now, 37 years into his career, he's stepping out with his first solo album. It's called You Should Be So Lucky, and you can hear Benmont Tench perform songs from it live in our studio tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on soundcheck.org. Here's a preview. This is a song called Blonde Girl, Blue Dress.
Blonde girl in a blue dress, she's walking away from me. She's standing so still, but she's walking away. Green eyes on the blue day, black birds in a field of white. Blonde girl in the blue dress, and she's walking away. Have you ever come so close? Have you ever just touched down? Have you ever come so close that you could almost red sun in the dawn sky?
thunder on a sunny day. Blonde girl in the blue dress, and she's walking away.
That's the song Blonde Girl Blue Dress from the new solo album by Benmont Tench, keyboardist for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Hear Benmont Tench playing live in the studio tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, on soundcheck.org. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook to get the latest updates about who's in our studio. And speaking of in-studio sessions, stick around because the Brooklyn indie pop band Hospitality will play songs from their new album next. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Brooklyn band known as Hospitality is back with its second record. It's called Trouble, but it's only trouble if you don't like warm harmonies, driving rhythms, and plenty of atmosphere. For a taste of their new music, the band has joined me here in the Soundcheck studio to play a few songs from Trouble. Here is Hospitality with a song called Sullivan in a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. That is the band Hospitality with a song called Sullivan, live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. That appears on the band's new album, their second, which is called Trouble. Let me introduce you to the members of Hospitality. Amber Papini, singing and playing the guitar. Nathan Michel was at our piano for that piece. Brian Betancourt playing the bass, doing some backing vocals. David Christian behind our drum kit. Amber and Nathan joining me at the mics. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
First time you were on the show, the first album was just out, and you were part of our series Blind Date, where we introduce our listeners to, you know, young and emerging bands. And when we asked you guys back then to describe your music in three words or less, you used these three words: nervous first date. There's something a little more assured about the music on this new record, it seems. Amber, you're nodding your head. Is that?
Yeah. No, I think that. One of the goals, I think, with the sound for this record is we wanted to take our time, and that takes a lot of like zen kind of confidence and like relax, you know, before we, you know, sometimes we get nervous and we fly by the seat of our pants, and we were conscious about like slowing down and.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, now, a lot of people are remarking on a different sound for this record from the first, that it's slightly darker in places. Was that a conscious decision as well? Was that something that you guys had in mind when you started writing the songs?
I think we wanted to have the production be a bit darker, just the recording to feel a little bit warmer than the first record, and for the arrangements to not be quite so brittle and high-endy. So, yeah, that was definitely a conscious decision.
So a little more in terms of darker textures, darker musical colors.
Yeah, and a little more reverb on things to kind of smooth things out a little bit.
And having had the experience now, it's been about 2 years, I think.
Yeah, exactly 2 years.
Last year. So you've done a ton of touring, and that kind of – what does that do to an emerging band when you have that kind of, you know, in the cauldron experience for so long?
I don't
great.
Know. What does
I mean,
it do?
It makes you a better player.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're just performing all the time and you're on different stages and in different environments, and you just get used to every kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
We never perfected the set list. I was obsessed with coming up with an absolutely perfect set list that just flowed, and we would change it every night. Never got it quite right. So now we have another chance to do that.
with twice the amount of songs.
Exactly,
presumably.
Right.
So Trouble is the name of the album. Hospitality is the name of the band. There seems like there might be a little, you know, a little playing with your listeners' minds with that combination of titles.
Yeah, totally. I think originally we liked the name Hospitality because we envisioned ourselves like, what if we're like a metal band? Or like, what if we have really dark music? But like the music never panned out that way. So I was into the idea of a contradiction of some sort.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
We finally, I think, achieved that.
Was there ever a time where Hospitality might have become a metal band?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
All right. Now you guys are one of many bands out of Brooklyn, but rather than being from like Williamsburg, you guys live in Red Hook, right?
Right.
Now there's a big. You know, there's the jalopy scene, all this old-timey music and stuff like that. Are you guys into that at all?
We used to go to Sonny's from time to time. It's pretty near where we live. They mm-hmm. do a bluegrass jam, I think,
maybe
every
Wednesday.
Saturday
night.
Or Saturday. Is it Wednesday? Anyway.
But the
we obviously don't go that much.
Yeah.
But no, we're not really that much a part of it, but we're admirers of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So what's on in the van then during the 2 years of touring?
Pink Floyd. Dave, our drummer, is really good at bringing in the music. He delivers.
So Dave's good at set lists.
And he's good at set lists, too, actually. He's good at flow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind, Nathan, for the next tour.
Yeah.
You guys want to play another song for us?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Nightingale?
Yes.
All right. We're speaking with the members of Hospitality. The band is putting out their second album called Trouble. After touring around a bit, they'll be back home on March 1st with a concert at the Music Hall of Williamsburg. They're playing for us today here in the Soundcheck studio. This song is called Nightingale.
That is called Nightingale, live performance from the band Hospitality here in the Soundcheck studio. Trouble is the name of the record. And the members of Hospitality all now dashing across the studio, switching from one instrument to another. For this song, Amber will go from the keyboard back to guitar. Nathan, who was on guitar, is now going behind our drum kit. David out from behind the drums and over to the keyboard. Brian is still playing the bass, though. Let's hear them live on Soundcheck once again. This song is Going Out. Is the name of the song from the band Hospitality, playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. And another song from their latest album, their sophomore release, called Trouble. And Nathan and Amber once again joining me back at the microphones. And Nathan, with a band, I mean, you were talking before about how, you know, in touring, you always found it kind of difficult to get the right set list. You have a band where people run from one instrument to another. So just on a practical level, while it's great to have many musicians playing many different instruments, you have to consider all that too, don't
right.
you?
Right. Well, we didn't have it that way last time. We were all playing one instrument last time. So yeah, this time it's definitely factors in. So.
And how are those decisions made? Is it like, I really like the guitar riff on this song, I want to play this song on guitar?
I know, that's sort of the way I. Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to play drums some, and Dave let me play. So. Yeah, it's just we kind of negotiate.
And did you, Amber, did you play both guitar and keyboards growing up, or did you have to learn the keyboards from, I don't know, from Nathan? Or?
I grew up, my first instrument, I guess, was piano. My dad was a pianist, and he taught me how to play piano, and then I picked up the guitar when I was a teenager.
All right. So some of the songs on Trouble, they have an almost orchestral sound. I mean, obviously in a studio you can do that with electronic keyboards and stuff, but is it an ambition of yours to work with strings and horns and stuff like that at some point?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we brought in a really great trumpet player. One of the songs on the record has a really beautiful trumpet solo, and there's some flutes and strings and stuff. On the last record we had some stuff. So, yeah, I don't think we ever want to go full on, orchestral mm-hmm. pop. But it's nice to have those textures available.
Really beautiful.
They work out really well on the album. The record is called Trouble, the newest from the Brooklyn band Hospitality. They're heading out on tour, and when they come home on March 1st, it'll be to play at the Music Hall of Williamsburg. They've been playing for us today, and great to see you both again and the rest of the band. Thank you all for coming in and playing for us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is Soundcheck. Been shooting video of Hospitality's session here at Soundcheck, and you can watch it on our website, soundcheck.org.
From Russia with love.
All this week we're talking about the music and pop culture of Russia in a series we call From Russia with Soundcheck. Tomorrow, a new book tells the story of the Russian performance art collective known as Pussy Riot. We'll talk with author Masha Gessen about her book, Words Will Break Cement. And then a bit of Americana. Jason Isbell played with the Drive-By Truckers before launching his solo career. His latest album, Southeastern, ended up on many best-of lists for 2013. Hear him play in our studio on the show tomorrow, or listen to it right now on soundcheck.org. It's actually one of our most popular features on the site right now. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.